And we are live.
Hey folks, 3D Politics here live again on Monday. I'm Tom McKay, your host with all three Davids that matter here in Oklahoma. David Vann, David Oldham, and David D'Ambroso. We've got some exciting stuff on the news today. What do you want to start with, David Vann?
I tell you, we got a loose cannon at our state attorney general's office.
Tell us about it.
Well, we've got, we're hunting down opioid manufacturers, the big pharmaceutical companies. The problem is, our attorney general wants to settle out of court, and then he wants to decide where the money goes and who gets hired and how the money gets spent.
Sounds good. What's wrong?
Kind of a centralized thing. Sounds yeah. Like the way
is that his job?
I mean, you know, who needs a legislature? Imagine we can just disband our legislature.
Let me the money.
I mean, this seems kind of rude, David. It doesn't seem like Hunter shows up to your job and tells you how to do it.
Yeah, a whole new bit here.
What a deal! Fact is, we could just get rid of the longest state constitution in the United States this way, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could.
Just leave it to Mike Hunter.
Could Hunter do that? I need more excited.
Ask him, he'll tell you so.
Well, so let me ask you, because I don't know if we've gotten far enough into what exactly is going on.
Okay.
But does the legislature have to approve any court deal that the attorney general wants to capitulate to?
Okay.
Or
he is representing as his client, the attorney general, the state of Oklahoma.
Correct.
Now, we already have a problem with this because we are assuming that it is the state government itself that has been harmed by, in this case I'm talking about, Purdue Pharmaceutical, and not the people themselves.
But we are the government, David.
No, we're not. Because, I mean, it'd be nice if they would split it up umpteen, ways and give us each a check. And I'd say, okay, fine. But instead of letting those people who are harmed file a lawsuit against a company, what many times happens in this scenario is a government will sue, and then they will bankrupt that company so that the actual victims, when we go to claim our damages, we got a bankrupt company and all the money just got sent to the government.
Yeah,
and so that's a problem right there. Now getting to your next thing, a more direct answer. If in fact the state of Oklahoma is the client that Attorney General Hunter is representing,
sounds right,
then it is the state of Oklahoma's money. Mm-hmm. When he directs the appropriation, he is clearly violating the Constitution, which calls for the legislature to appropriate.
Yeah. He's usurped his powers and broken the
separation. Yeah, but these guys are real dumb, though.
And what about intent? He didn't mean to.
Oh, he meant well, right. And here's the other thing. He basically, in the Purdue settlement, created a state institution that then he has power and control over the forming of it, and that is the governor's authority as chief of executive.
Right.
The Purdue. So, that's.
Later, when I watch this and I have no idea what you're talking about, what is the Purdue settlement?
Okay, one of the pharmaceutical manufacturers that has been named by many states as, doing harm.
A pusher of opioids.
Yes.
Oh, this is the opioid.
I'm sorry, I should have said
yes.
That.
Yes.
And
producer. And pusher.
Yes.
And so what's the difference? This first one's free either way.
The first settlement here happened in February, and it so incensed our legislative leaders that they quickly wrote a bill, and the governor signed it that says, no, you don't do that anymore, Mr. Attorney General. And then what does he do? Another pharmaceutical company that he was going to take to court, Teva, is the next one.
Right.
He signs a settlement with them. Well, the problem again, in our governor and our Speaker of the House, Senate Pro Tem, have all come to say, he still doesn't have a right to dictate how that money gets dispersed.
No.
It has to go in the state's general
treasury. How is he doing it, right?
But does he have the right to settle it according to the spokesperson for the state? Can he say, okay, this is a settlement?
He can settle that, yes.
But he can't appropriate.
Here's my problem is, he is not the plaintiff, or should not be. It should be the state itself. If anybody should be determining or approving, it should be the governor.
Well, it has to be the legislature. Only the legislature has power to be able to approve or disapprove of that. Maybe the governor, but approved by the legislature.
I think the governor does have some authority.
They hold the purse, is what I've heard.
Well, but he can't legislate, so he can't appropriate money. He can't do any of those things either.
Right. Now, so, we had a ruling today at the U.S. Supreme Court that does have some standing in this, and that had to do in the state of Virginia, or Commonwealth, as they would call themselves, that they were fighting this lawsuit over gerrymandering claims with their redistricting.
Right.
And the Republican House of Delegates, which is their House of Representatives, wanted to fight this. They're Republicans. The Attorney General of the state of Virginia, Commonwealth, is a Democrat. And he says, no, I'm happy with this. Let's leave this be. And so the legislature went to the Supreme Court saying, no, we want to fight this. And the Supreme Court said, no, you're just one branch or one house, one chamber of one branch of the government. We still don't have a clear distinction of who speaks on behalf of the state in lawsuits. Because I don't think the Attorney General should have the power of a dictator to determine alone the strategy.
Well, I believe some states do require that the legislature approve any such deals before they're finalized. Kind of like the Senate has to approve a treaty.
Yeah,
sort of a thing.
Yeah. Now,
I don't know what it is here in Oklahoma.
When you're in a tort lawsuit, when you're dealing with a tort lawsuit as opposed to a criminal lawsuit.
Right.
In the criminal lawsuit, the chief prosecutor has the authority on behalf of the state, on behalf of the people, to prosecute crimes.
Right.
But in tort law, who is the plaintiff? And this is my problem here of what Mike Hunter's doing, and we probably should get some good education in civics on this. Does the Attorney General have the authority to file a lawsuit of his own initiating, or should he be directed by the legislature, or by the governor, or some entity, or maybe it should be a resolution of both houses and signed to the governor?
Sure, maybe all of the above. I mean, shouldn't it be... I mean, I think it should be his area to, if it feels the need. If he didn't do it, somebody would say, why didn't you make the move?
Well, he's there to serve, not to usurp.
But then the state shouldn't be called his client.
If he's not serving a client, or if he's just on his own claiming, this is what I think is what's best, I don't think he should be going to civil court to sue for damages where we don't have a clear sense of the state that the state should
be
involved.
Does he have standing to sue in that area, is what you're
saying? Oh, he would on behalf of his client.
And the client is?
The state of Oklahoma.
But that would be in a capitalistic system. He's a civil servant. He's not serving a client.
Yeah, again, you and I go sue somebody. We don't get the Attorney General handling our legal affairs.
Right.
The state of Oklahoma does. And so...
But the state of Oklahoma is us collectively.
It is.
And so the thing is, he is doing it on behalf of us collectively. And the question then becomes, how does he get the authority to do that on us collectively?
Absolutely.
I think it is inherent in his office.
Because we've been collectively...
But I think it is.
But you know, I don't know. You raise a good question.
This is a recent we didn't used to have these kinds of things 50 years ago. This is an encroachment. This is an expanding of powers.
Well, certainly the usurpation and his desire to create a plea bargain, if you will, and create something out of it. He has zero authority to do that.
That's
zero.
Yeah.
He can take the money, but even that is questionable that it's not going back to the people that it's staying in government.
I would suggest that this kind of usurpation of power has been going on for decades. It's education of the electorate is why we're finally seeing it.
Well, that's a good point.
Very good. Well, yeah. I mean, yes, it's been going on for 100 plus years,
so,
as we're going to talk about
it's just now that people are seeing the vagary of the law that allows them to abuse their power.
Sure. What I like to recommend is, whether you're a senator or a state representative, you got until, I think, the 10th or 12th of July to call for an interim study. And I think this is an area where we need to find what the powers and authorities are of our Attorney General's
office. David, first of all, none of those people watch this show.
So tell them to get out there and pick up
some
cards.
Actually, some of them do.
Uh-oh.
I need a list.
Some of them tell me it's their guilty pleasure, okay? You know what I'm talking about.
I heard that politicians are liars.
And they're going, there's some of them, because of the very next segment we're going to have, are going to be tagged on this, and hopefully we'll see this particular episode.
Do not share this video. Please stop watching right now.
We'll now pause for 30 seconds for David D'Ambrosio to walk off the set. All right, I'm done with mine. What you got?
I kind of wanted to discuss the idea of this PBS story where they've taken the animated personified animals and decided to talk about sex with children, because PBS has this animated show called Arthur that's all about...
Isn't that natural, though? I mean, don't we start with birds and
have
the bees?
Sex. It's true, David. Animals do have sex.
In front of our children.
But how soon is too soon to teach your puppy about anal sex? Isn't that really the question?
According to the state of California, 4, 3 p.m.
So what do you say happened?
Well, what's going on with PBS, they feel like that they're teaching love and tolerance of other lifestyles by showing normalizing the marriage of a same-sex couple. And one of the, as a semanticist by trade, that's how I make my money, is looking at the meaning of words. Now, when you say marriage, for 3,000 some odd years, that means a man and a woman, and it doesn't really indicate any sexual behavior. Mm-hmm. Marriage between a man and a woman indicates a lot of relationship that has nothing to do with sex. Mm-hmm. But the minute you add the word gay as a qualifier to marriage, you're now talking about anal sex, at least. And the question has always come to me, when it comes to lesbians that get married, once they make their marriage vows, how do they follow through physically? Is it consummation by instrumentation? How do they do it? So there can be no equality, friends. If you'll just do this with me at home, take two fingers, point them like this. See that? That's one example. Hey, now take two circles like this.
Why am I
That's
on the show?
That's example B.
Why?
Take one of these and
oh
one
my
of
gosh,
these.
Turn this off.
That's right, kids. Uncle Tom here is going to tell
you. Tom's not going to get into weeds, guys.
We should have warned about this segment.
Now, what you have to realize, children, is they're now, you guys think this is funny.
Oh, it's hilarious!
It is hilarious. Well, you're not wrong. I mean, Milo agrees with you. Milo doesn't think
that lesbians don't have sex. Children, you have to explain.
Tom, you're on a roll.
I have five kids, aged 31 to 11, and I have an 11-year-old that wants to buy a shirt that has a rainbow flag on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a discussion to have with an 11-year-old, thanks to the encroachment of basic adulthood. It's mixed company. Yep. You don't talk about anal sex in front of children, but PBS feels like you do, but they promote it according to what they call tolerance of other lifestyles.
Well, frankly, if you're an employee of mine, you don't talk about it either, because it very easily could be sexual harassment.
Yeah.
And the thing is...
Unless it's gay.
Especially if it's gay.
Yeah.
Especially because of the fact that it often is unwanted, and how can you know beforehand necessarily?
That's true. The standard for women has been, I was made to feel uncomfortable in the workplace.
Yes, that's the only thing.
No, you don't understand. The real standard is, it's bigotry to ever criticize any kind of minority, whether it's a religious minority or an ethnic minority or a sexual minority. So you're not allowed to do it as a heterosexual, but as a homosexual or someone that lives in any kind of alternative lifestyle, they have complete carte blanche on this. They can do whatever they want at any time, and it is not harassment. But if you were to do it as a straight, you understand it's some animals are more equal than others. There's a book you've got to read about. Farms, animals are how we teach the story. Okay,
right.
Birds and the bees. Arthur, he's an aardvark or something, an Animal Farm. You know?
Could be two birds.
There are some animals are more equal, and queer animals are more equal.
And every act of seduction is really an act of debate rape. She talked me into it.
You mean?
Hey, I want to talk about the point you brought up here.
The point is, when you qualify a word like rape or marriage, you diluted it into a thing that is no longer marriage or rape.
Okay, let me say that. What we have looked at from a civil standpoint for years, as far as the government's concerned, is a covenant. Okay, covenant
right.
Is a contract.
This is going to get us right into licensure.
Right. Right, whereas...
What a slippery slope, Dave.
Marriage has always had a cultural connotation and a religious connotation.
Right.
As far as the government's concerned... It's a covenant. It's a partnership. And there should be no distinction on covenants.
What does the government have to do with marriage? That always confused me.
Yeah.
Well, they don't want you marrying a white girl.
In October 2nd, 2009, an analysis by the New York Times that a homosexual couple denied marriage benefits would incur an additional $467,000 approximately dollars over their lifetime. So this is if a homosexual couple was denied marriage benefits, they would incur an additional $467,000 expenses over a lifetime.
See, I don't see it because
it's New York Times, 2009.
We've had the marriage penalty as a foundation of our tax policy federally with the IRS. Marriage filing jointly? No, it's
the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm just telling you what it's been for decades now. Is if the two of you filed separately, you would get a bigger write-off than when you file jointly.
He's a sovereign citizen. He is traveling, officers. No, he's always traveling.
I thought there was a marriage penalty up until the last, I don't know.
That's what it was called. It was called a marriage penalty.
I thought that existed, but I thought they had changed that.
I'm hoping they have, but I'm telling you what the we've had for decades in America in our tax code is a marriage penalty.
It has been that way. Yeah. My suggestion is, though, that the tax penalty for homosexuals is justified because heterosexuals have provided the juice to create every bridge and every building. That is, everything ever made and established is due to heterosexual behavior.
Yeah, heterosexual
I need a tax break based on the fact that I've created five natural average taxpayers.
You
homosexuals can't even accidentally create a taxpayer.
No, they can be inseminated.
That's not a natural average taxpayer. It costs more money to create a kid in the test tube than it does at home with a mom and dad.
So whatever the economic argument goes away, is there any other argument? Because
well,
give it 100 years.
What's love got to do with it, Tina?
Well, here's the only thing about it, though.
She's related to Mike.
Oh, he does!
No Doubt was a band before.
Okay. The only problem here is that the tax code is unconstitutional.
Here we go!
Even by... Well, hey!
All right.
If it is, it is.
How dare you be inconsistent?
We need to have a pool. How many minutes can we get in a session
before it's unconstitutional? What does that have anything to do with licensure?
You're good. Well,
the question is, what am I here for, then? But the reason is that everybody isn't taxed equally. And that's the problem.
Yeah, progressive. Progressive taxes.
Not only is it progressive, but improperly progressive, but also causes a sin tax, if you will, for particular modes of behavior. Hey, if you stay single or you get married, there's a penalty. The thing is that can't be in the tax code and have it meet the criteria of equal equal justice under the law because it and equal taxation under the law. And so that's 14th and 16th Amendments.
But it's not the government's job to punish that.
Well, Let me say this.
They're not allowed to because unless you've harmed somebody.
I'll use an illustration. This came from Hubert Humphrey when he was speaking with Golda Meir in Israel back in the mid-60s. So many young Israelis were not getting married. They were shacking up. And he, this is Hubert Humphrey, was encouraging her to change the tax code to incentivize them getting married. And here was Humphrey's justification. He said, you are what, a couple million Jews in this nation, and you've got how many tens of millions of Arabs surrounding you? You need to repopulate. Who's going to repopulate more, shacking up couples or married couples? And Golda says, oh, yeah, you're right. So she started making incentives. If they get married, they get a better apartment, they get better...
This goes all the way back to Caesar.
It's the Ponzi scheme. We need a bigger next generation to prop up us, just like we're propping up our parents.
You have
to. It's not a Ponzi scheme.
Living on tomorrow.
Well, replant your crop. It's not a Ponzi
scheme. I'm not justifying it, okay? Well, I'm just saying that is their mentality.
It's the fact. Yes. Taxes have always been placed on activities that you want to make fewer and less of.
Yeah.
Suppress. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But and you encourage behavior by relieving tax burden.
Except the thing is that constitutionally, you're not allowed to do that. That's the problem. Because what that does is it unconstitutionally violates some at the benefit of others.
But if you really feel like it, you can do it.
Well, it is. It's the term is social engineering.
Well, and it's the whole social engineering, socialism genre of philosophy that gets you into the Ponzi scheme that has to have you have a bigger next generation and that's after because you put them all into debt. You need the slaves coming up to pay for all your excess today.
Yeah, Tom's
point. I'm a cynic, but I'm not that far gone.
He's creating more tax serfs than your average homosexual. So he should get a break.
No, they're slaves.
They're not slaves.
Stop and think about it. Wait. The old Israeli proverb says that the debt, the usury, is good. No, it says that the borrower is the servant to the lender.
There you go.
And so the thing is that it is slavery, it is servitude that we are putting upon the future generations every year that we have excess.
We weren't talking about taxation at the debted level. I'm just talking about validating taxes. Mm-hmm. That is, you have to fund your government. It's not like it just accidentally.
But
gets
not
funded.
The government we have today. We have a very minimal government that's very easy to fund if it was done legally.
If we weren't already in debt.
Where's the fun in that?
I know we were talking about gay PBS kids. I
don't know. Because it devolves into a tax.
The New York Times.
Well, because that's
the problem.
That's why it's all come up in the first place. It's all about money.
Seduction is disguised in debate rape, and PBS disguises their tax grab in a whole thing about tolerance of love and different lifestyles. It's not about love.
Are you
it's
upset
about,
that you pay for PBS?
Yeah.
That's
oh
what
this my
is
God!
Well, he's just cheap. That's all. He doesn't care about the gay thing. Doesn't want to pay.
Now
for
that
it.
Was good. That was cathartic. I think it's a PBS thing.
That's
all right. What else we got here?
All right. Somebody else.
Well, New York Times. You mentioned that. What was that $467,000 thing about? Was it the tax burden?
It had to do with they'll incur an additional $467,000 in expenses over the lifetime compared to a married heterosexual couple.
And they base that on what?
I'd have to tear apart.
The New York Times is never wrong.
Yeah, never.
Let's point out what they're not. They're selectively not pointing out is many of these extra expenses have nothing to do with the government. It's whether or not a health insurance policy determines you to be one family or you got to write two. You're an insurance
guy. Everything has something to do with government. Okay.
I understand.
So you made a big mistake right there.
Okay. But what I'm saying is getting the family discount, getting you know, the family policy with one deductible for the whole
you're
family.
In a higher risk pool as a homosexual regardless.
It leaves out their opportunity.
Well, that's another
point. Actuarially, you are engaged in far more risky activities on average than a heterosexual individual, and there are many more risks. So,
and they can take power of attorney or create trust. They're free to do that. You can leave your money to a cat if you want to. So this idea that they can't create some sort of civil union outside of the church's marriage concept is just totally ridiculous.
I say just take it away from government. You know, I don't think that marriage has anything to do with government. You can recognize unions, for tax purposes.
That's right. The government should just get rid of the term marriage and leave that to the church and society and culture and just have a covenantal
institution
where a couple can just go. And I want to commend Representative Todd Russ has filed this bill every year. It just allows for a couple go file down at the county court clerk's office an affidavit. You walk out married. And you don't. If you want to have a religious,
well, you're already married. You just now are registered with the state.
Yeah,
you were married before, but now registered.
It's not a license; it's a certificate.
Correct.
The importance of that. David's told me long ago when we first talked about that. A license is permission to do that which would otherwise be illegal. Your child does not have a birth license; they have a birth certificate. We didn't license their birth. We certified that
not
it happened.
Not yet.
Yeah. So that's, this is not China.
What is this bill? Who is the person again?
Oh, State Representative Todd Russ.
And what is the bill he continues to push?
I call it the Marriage Freedom Bill. He's filed it so many times. He didn't get a hearing in committee.
No, I did
give him five bonus points in the Freedom Index for writing it again this year.
Nice.
And I punished the chairman of the House committee who refused to give it a bill, a hearing.
Do we punish Russ by making him watch the show? Does he watch it or not? I'm sorry.
You see, the
local county clerks, though, need that tax money from the licensure, and so that's probably why they're not wanting to do it. Because
no, I have to say it's not, because it won't impact that at all. That doesn't mandate any change in fees or anything. What it does protect them, the county court clerk from, is certifying that they're attesting to it
if you're an atheist, you can get your commissar to preside over your union,
Remember the famous case in Kentucky, Kay Davis, who was a district court clerk, and she refused to sign them.
Right.
You know?
And all the liberals said she was so evil for not doing her job. But sanctuary cities are great.
Right. But it was a violation of her conscience for her to declare it a marriage.
And she's not entitled to a conscience.
No,
she
here's the problem.
Well, that's literally what the court said.
Here's the problem.
About sanctuary cities too, right?
You guys, can you let the man finish?
Okay. Sorry, Dave.
Her oath of office was to uphold the laws of the state. There were no laws written.
Right.
In the first state that ever the Supreme Court of that state said you gotta allow gays to get married, it was Massachusetts. And they...
Is that also a commonwealth?
They put a stay on their ruling for the next 6 months for the legislature to rewrite statutes that were consistent with this ruling so that the legislature was the one who made the laws that the agencies were to uphold.
Right.
That's the way it should have been.
That's all neat, but the feds probably walked in and said, supremacy clause.
In Oklahoma, it did not happen. Our gay marriage ban that we passed by amendment back, 10, 12 years ago, got thrown out by Supreme Court ruling, or assumed to be thrown out. They didn't actually rule specifically, but it was assumed to be thrown out. So our agencies just wrote new marriage license applications that were not approved by our legislature.
Right.
And so this is a slippery slope. We've got to get back to doing things the right way. And that's the court. Okay, fine. Well, you make your ruling, but you respect that that's the legislature that makes the laws.
See, David, this is it's so frustrating here, David Van, because you don't understand that sometimes people really want to do something and all these boring processes just get in the way.
I know.
And if you want to do something, you know, you just got to go for it.
Let Mike Hunter do it.
I think I
worked for him. I don't know. If you ask the RNC, maybe not. But tens of thousands of pieces of literature out there.
I think I heard this from Mark Levin one time, talking about the Constitution is a unique document in that it's our document of protection until you are elected. And then when you are elected, it's your obstacle to getting anything
back. Yes. That is exactly what they see it as.
Yeah. Guys, you don't understand. I think that's beautiful. I mean, you know, as someone who wants to get something done, as a progressive, and we know that any progress is good progress. All progress is good progress. When you're an alcoholic and you're progressing towards that full cirrhosis, that's good.
We're going to get a sarcasm.
I'm being serious. It's very progressive.
In the corner.
And you're running this race to your goal, and your goal is post-scarcity. Your goal is perfect equality. And you've got all these stupid rules and these fuddy-duddies in your way and the Constitution, and they're each hurdles in this field and track competition. And any way you can, you just kind of cartwheel over it, you go around it or whatever. And if no one calls you out on it, and no one's been calling anyone out on it for over 115 years in this country, you still get the medal.
Yeah.
And you achieve your goal. So why wouldn't you do it?
Well, you'll get a medal even if you don't accomplish your goal, because you tried and you meant well.
They're playing for keeps, and they're very effective.
Yes.
I don't know who went to war this week. Is that true?
Yeah, New York Times said this. That's why I wanted to get this number correct, this
$467,000
from the New York Times. Is never wrong, if I understand. Is that what they say? Okay. Yeah, so we're in a shooting war with Russia. That's what they're saying. Apparently,
this reported today.
This is World War III, yeah. Well, they just milk this thing. This Russia thing is, I don't know, it is like their diluted golden goose for the left and the media. But, you know, I'm repeating myself, right? The media in this country is nothing more than the PR wing of the Democratic Party. And, I mean, this Russia thing's insane. They're saying that we could attack the Russian power grid, the United States of America. That's how Chernobyl happened. You know, they had a power surge.
That was our fault?
Well, it could be our fault next time. That's what the New York Times is reporting. And we are at a full-blown war. I mean, people are dying right now. Now, where are they? I don't know.
Is that in Georgia?
It could be. The state of. Southeast.
Just last week, Trump was the agent of Russia. Now you say you went to war against him?
Well, so this is a fun one. They get this thing, and it's cool. You've heard that phrase, have your cake and eat it too? The left does this.
They can
do it. So they live in a post-scarcity universe where $32 trillion doesn't matter to Bernard Sanders for healthcare costs. Forget that it's double all the money in circulation in the world. $32 trillion, I mean, he's super clever, you know. He said, but it will cost us $50 trillion otherwise. So you're saving money, spending more money than all the money in circulation. So they get to have their cake and keep it, you know, and eat it too.
I was asking about war here.
No,
the cake.
Well, this is the point. I'm tying it in.
Okay.
You stopped me right before
I did. Yeah, David.
So the point is, yes, Trump can be an agent of Putin, an agent of the FSB or former KGB, and at the same time be in an active shooting war with Russia. See, there's the cake, they have it, and they're eating it. They've eliminated scarcity and logic. They can have everything any way they want.
How many Democratic presidential candidates are there?
At least 24.
There's a bunch of them, right?
20. One of your kids might be one of them.
You're in trouble.
Might be the one with the shirt.
Yeah.
I heard Arthur is.
He identifies as 35 years old. I heard
you're 11-year-old. She's 11. She's probably miles ahead of him.
But if she identifies as 35, I would say she's the top candidate.
Arthur for president.
I'm voting for Tom's daughter.
Okay. Well, anyway,
I want to make a quick point that I've heard multiple interviews of these up-and-coming Democratic nominees, and what you're saying is true. And they ask them a simple question: would you like this law repealed? And the answer is both. And every time you hear these guys, it doesn't matter what the question is. Mm-hmm. Well, on one end, you know, and then on the other end,
they're completely
They love both each time, no matter what.
Yeah, well, I mean, they live in this post-truth era. You know, they live in this relativistic society that they have constructed. for over 60
Schrodinger's
years.
Schrodinger's box, or whatever.
Yeah, Schrodinger's cat. Yeah, yeah. It happened, it didn't happen. They have it both
alive
ways.
And dead.
Well, you're a misogynist bigot, but, you know, gender and race are social constructs. So which is it?
Right.
If they're social constructs, you can't be a bigot. Right. But both, you're both a bigot, and they're made up.
Right.
You know, at the same time.
What about the other wars? Middle East? What's...
I guess, you know, I heard John Bolton, like, attacked, like, one of our ships or something, is what I've been hearing on the internet. I don't know that John Bolton has that capability.
Well, I heard it was two or three.
He made himself appear as a drone or something. I don't know what the story is. And he's attacking freighters in the, was it the Port of Hormuz, right? I think
right.
The Strait of Hormuz. Yeah. Is what 60% of the world's petroleum travels to.
And he's doing that and pretending it's Iran.
I love John Bolton. Here's the thing. I'm going to take some crap. You know, I know he's a neocon. I know he might be a warmonger, but he's my favorite warmonger. And I don't have a lot of those. He's number one. I like him. He was the president of Red Eye. And that's the only reason I'm doing the show is because I love Red Eye so much.
The mustache.
Tom had this idea to do Red Eye, and he's got the twirling
mustache.
No, he's a, you know, I think John Bolton's a brilliant guy. He sees things a little bit differently than we do.
Does he twirl it, or does he still
have a walrus? I thought it was like a, it's a walrus.
It might be true. Maybe Iran is attacking tankers. We'll never know.
The controversy now is, and they even showed film footage of, you know, some mines that didn't go off, and so they went back and retrieved them. The
Timex got covered.
The Iranian guard.
But then there are other witnesses that said, no, they saw projectiles flying and hitting this tanker.
So the thing about projectiles is you typically can't see a missile or a bullet.
No, like torpedoes. Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I thought it was torpedoes.
I heard there's an air attack. See, we'll never know.
We'll never know.
Also, this lends to the whole thing that we can't trust what we're hearing.
Right.
I mean, how can you trust when you see things on TV or you hear them, whether from the government or from the news media or whatever, they have told so many lies, you cannot really know what the truth is.
And they've inflicted this fatal wound on themselves, and, you know, they're master escape artists. You know, they're all Teflon Dons. You know, they have inflicted this wound on themselves with all this fake news, the fact that the vast majority of Americans do not believe or trust the media, believe that it's impartial or even accurate, and they're trying to blame it on conservatives or Trump.
Well, and
he is the reason people have lost faith in
institutions. Well, and this goes back to why I harp on the Constitution so much and that war needs to be declared by Congress. because we know that when Trump first took office, he was getting intelligence reports from people who were actively lying to him about their intelligence.
Right, James Clapper,
the very people that were spying on him in the first place. And so if he has the power to get us into war alone without Congress, how bad is that? If they're lying about the very intelligence none of us can get a hold of.
Have you considered that there would be fewer Michael Bay films made if the president couldn't just unilaterally go to war?
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
That would really hurt the economy.
What we have found out is that our CIA intelligence briefing about what weapons of mass destruction have been greatly exaggerated. Or wholly made up.
Right.
You know, we've seen so many things.
Sean agrees.
And so, it's a scary thing when you start seeing war. And I tell you the reason why I see it. I interact with mentally suffering veterans with PTSD all the time. I did today again. You know, and it's when you look at the casualties of war, many of them are in our institutions. The suicide rate amongst veterans. You know, war costs us more than I think we forgot the real cost of war.
It's incalculable.
Yeah.
It's not money.
You break people's psyches in ways that don't always present themselves immediately or ever to others.
Here's the thing. We've got probably the finest fighting forces that were ever trained by any culture, society in that. But then getting them back to civilian life has been a much harder task.
Sure.
You know, and it's a challenge. So, I'm not a pacifist. No, I believe in defending our country, but I'm very leery of those who may have ulterior motives for sending us to war.
I agree. Yeah. You know, they really mess up the Teddy Roosevelt corollary. I mean, we've got this huge wampin' stick, but we don't speak softly. We're barking, you know?
Yeah.
We've got the John Boltons of the world just barking at everyone, the Hillary Clintons just screaming at them and saying, "Do you want me to come over there and kill you? Because I will." I mean, that's just the opposite, you know? I think you have this military as a defensive function. You know, I think in the 1940s they changed it from the Department of War to the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Was it in the 1940s?
We have such a large military to prevent war, because no one should want to fight us. And I think we really misuse it often with our geopolitics, and it's unfortunate. It is the neoliberalism. It is the it is the progressivism. It is the war hawkishness of the Hillary Clintons and John Boltons, John McCain's.
Yeah, part of that is the aftermath of the physical battle. It is that guilt that seems to be resident in us, especially in the more liberal faction, that thinks we owe it them to rebuild their nation better than it was. And my thing is, you know what, you want to strike fear and terror into people, you attack them and then say, okay, don't do that again, we're leaving, you clean up the mess.
Right.
Right.
Does that make me heartless?
Well,
maybe. But you know what, the casualties of war on our nation are a lot lower that way. We didn't lose very many lives in the actual battles of the last two decades.
Well, guys, we're in the final 15-minute stretch here of the 3D Politics Show. Let's just tune in for the people who are listening. I'm Tom McKay, your host, sort of. David D'Ambroso, David Oldham, David Van, your three Davids that really matter. You find them at Sooner Politics and Constitutional Grounds, and David Brand D'Ambroso is just anywhere he says he is. Let's go on with this, and then I want to bring up a more ethereal philosophical concept of co-ownership, how it plays out. But finish off your topic here.
I think he was, the licensure we want to get.
We do need to get into licensure. Were we done with this?
I think so.
Move on to licensure.
So we've covered licensure a bit already this evening. You know, we talked about marriage licensure and so forth. But David turned me on to the...
This David, right?
Yes, David Van turned me on to...
Any sentence is David turning me on. I mean,
to what are you talking about?
He turned me on to this. and what he said was, it's the Occupational Licensee Advisory Commission.
You know, we're going to put that up on our Facebook page.
We're going to put this up, but I wanted to bring it out because I harp on the unconstitutionality of licensure. And I wanted to bring it up because they say right in their executive summary, they say that they are looking to reform licensure, not get rid of it, but reform it. And I do commend that some of the things, they do want to get rid of some things.
Right.
But it's very arbitrary because they don't want to get rid of everything, but some things. But they do say this, and I think it's important. They say an occupational license is essentially permission from a government institution to work in a particular field.
Mm-hmm. To keep us safe.
Which is horrible wording,
and I feel safe.
At least.
No, that is exact wording.
Well, what I mean is it's horrible.
But it is exactly what it is, that if you want to work in a particular field that they have arbitrarily decided needs a license and has a board or whatever to create the requirements for it, that you may not participate. It is actually a crime to participate in that field of occupation unless you have your license.
That makes a lot of sense, because I like the guy that cuts my hair to have a lot more training than an abortion technician. It just makes sense.
And that is exactly what we have. It is that arbitrary. You actually have to have 1,600 or 2,000 hours to become a hair cutter.
And only 600 hours, less than half that, to be a law enforcement officer.
That's correct.
Makes sense.
Okay, I was served with one of these cease and desist orders from the state locksmith board a couple of years ago.
It was on my
website. Now, I do a lot of home improvements work, and sometimes, you know, I'm called in to fix up, let's say, some burglar kicked
she
in the door.
She replaced the doorknob and
I had a lock. I was working, and then somebody bought a whole bunch of furniture that had to be assembled, you know, cabinetry for a new office, called me in to get it done right, you know, and you know how it is.
Right.
You get it wrong, you have to take it apart, and you know, and all that. So they left the frustration to me. I had to tell them that little cam lock that goes on that one desk drawer that you get to lock, they have to call in a locksmith to just tighten that little nut and put that on. That is our state law, and I was
threatened. Is it really?
Yes, I was threatened with action against me in my business if I didn't remove any kind of inference in my website, and they didn't want to hear of another report of anybody hiring me to put a little cam lock on a file cabinet.
David, have you thought about all the people that would die if you inappropriately tighten that nut?
I know. You know, so the other day, I'm down at the locksmith's office, shop because I needed some keys made. And I'm asking them, I said, so what are you guys' dealings with the locksmith? They say, hey, as long as we keep filing and up doing our licenses, we're fine. And I said, you think it's necessary? He says, hey, sure cuts down the competition.
That's right.
Bingo.
That's exactly what it's all about.
It's protectionism.
And but you will be pleased to know that the latest committee report wanted to get rid of the alarm locksmith and fire sprinkler manager and salesperson license, but not the technician.
If you ever got a chance this last election cycle,
we don't mind loosening up the
cats. Kathy Costello, I told her, you've got to write an article on this. She was running for state labor commissioner,
right.
And she said, you need a license to sell furniture in the state. Not that they enforce it, but it's there. And then you need a special license if you sell bunk beds. That requires a separate license. She had us rolling. She was in town, Tulsa 912 project meeting. And I said, Kathy, you've got to write that down. Kathy, if you're listening, please, you've got to write that down. It was some of the best comedy. It was so ridiculously true.
Yeah. Well, and I would love to see that too, Kathy. In 2017, a study by the Institute for Justice, well-known legal firm, a pro bono by donation nonprofit legal firm, ranked Oklahoma as the 18th most burdensome licensing, or had the most burdensome licensing laws in the nation.
So we were not top 10.
We were not top 10 state, not the bottom 10. We were right.
But you could just as well call us the 18th safest state.
yet okey rigging things.
All right, now I get to throw out the Ben Franklin quote. Those who would trade essential liberty for temporary security deserve neither.
And he wanted to make the national bird turkey.
Yeah.
Checkmate.
Okay.
That's how argumentation really works.
Let's talk for just a second because what I want to help people see is that when you license something, you have to start with a prohibition.
Yeah.
You are not permitted. You are prohibited from participating in an activity. Now, who owns your body and your ability to do things
state
and so forth? That is literally what they would have you believe, is that the state owns you and
that's true. They can force me to take shots.
It's true.
Okay, well, that makes us subjects.
That makes us subjects, which we fought a revolution
against. Yes.
Now, we fought a revolution for a 2.5% luxury tea tax. Yeah, it's great.
Yep.
But it was also, in fact, read the Declaration of Independence, the indictments against the king were his tyrannical behavior.
Yeah, it was.
And so we fought that one, and we won. Tyranny lost. We were not going to be subjects anymore. In fact, we are to this day the only nation in the world that is run this way.
Keep telling yourself that.
No, we are not run this way.
in theory.
Yeah, supposed to be run
structured
this
way.
We are not run this way.
But see, they've been building a different structure. I wish I had a really good analogy. It's like they've been taking pieces out of our governance and constitution and building a phantom structure, and they've moved us over into this new post-law structure that we've all been living in.
Sure.
Oh. And people still think, like, you know, the constitution is the supreme document.
They
know?
Call it the post-constitutional age and the post-constitutional law.
Yeah.
We are post-constitution because they have thrown it all out.
Well, we're always so negative about it, Olden. Why can't we just be positive? That means you can do anything you want.
So,
to
wind us up in our last 8 minutes here, the reason we're post-constitutional is because there's no millennial alive today that remembers or was taught by the public schools what socialism is. They don't understand what socialism is, so they don't understand what the Constitution does.
Now, I figured out what socialism was pretty early on. I mean,
they don't know what it is.
It's more the relationship between the 50 states and the federal entity, because when we started this, it was 13 states or commonwealths got together and says, let's create a child, an entity called the federal government, but let's make it with very limited authority and powers, and we're going to keep our thumb on this. Over time, that little child's become the parent to us all.
What we're up against today is
We are treated like children.
What we're up against today is the millennial wed game. You may not be married to one, but you're going to have to live with them. Okay? These millennials don't know what is reality. And so we don't know, millennials, why the Constitution. That doesn't mean anything. What they know is the competition says socialism is what you want. Socialism is based on co-ownership.
I wish I could defend millennials.
Co-ownership is a lie, and that's what I want to finalize our last 5 minutes on here. My position is that co-ownership as a philosophy is a lie. You cannot co-own. Even at the point where my wife and I co-own the automobile, if I'm driving it, she doesn't own it. As long as I've got possession of it, I'm owning it. Same way, if we co-own the drinking fountain at the elementary school, as long as I'm in front of it, I own the drinking fountain until I share it. So, gentlemen, what's your concept on co-ownership?
Okay, we were talking about this before.
Yeah, but don't tell them that.
We were talking about it before the show, and I was trying to understand where you're coming from.
It sounds almost like
you're coming from that when there's... You're coming from the question about socialism kind of a thing. And
socialism is sold on the basis of the concept of co-ownership.
Okay.
What's wrong with being social?
Fascism is sold on the same concept.
In that sense, no. That's a misnomer. Somebody always controls.
Communism is, by definition, we all share the ownership. The problem is, and you saw it with the Soviet Union, especially you saw it in Red China, where you would talk about, they would talk about harms done to the people. They kept referring to the people.
Right.
This government acted and wanted us to know that they were there to defend the people, when in reality, they were oppressing the people.
Right.
Well, you know? And I just real quick, I just want a small correction that I think is quite significant. You know, socialism is the economic theory of communism. If you read Marx, socialism is communism. It is the it is controlling the means of production. It is nationalizing industry. And it's exactly what Hitler did.
Right.
He was a national socialist. So really, you probably can't even have fascism without socialism.
Nationalized
workers.
Our big enemy in the Cold War was the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics.
Right. Well,
and our enemy in World War II was the National Socialist German Workers' Party, or the Nazi Party.
Yes.
They're all socialists, dirty socialists.
They were. This was what's so funny is people say one's right, one's left, and that's just backwards because they're both left.
They're both authoritarian.
They're both authoritarian because the only way that any of this works is by having a tyrannical master dictating everything. And everything, all this communism and everything else, boils down that somebody has to force everybody to give up on human nature, which is to possess that which is, you know, ours, and to force it. When it's voluntary, no problem. But the thing is that a government philosophy and a government policy requires that force be involved, and that makes it no longer voluntary.
Co-ownership is a lie first presented by the serpent in the garden when they wanted to co-own God's tree. Co-ownership is a lie. It doesn't occur truly. You can call the tail of a dog a leg, and it'll be a leg until you try to walk on it. Co-ownership is evil, and on the left, co-ownership looks like communism. On the right, co-ownership looks like fascism. Children, I am Tom. This is David D'Ambroso, David Oldham, David Van. We are 3D Politics. We'll check you out next week, same time, same channel, 7 p.m. on Monday.
Share this video with a friend. Start a conversation.
Make it happen, kids. We're trying to save you.
All right.